Janet Schiff, Scott Johnson, and 1913. And Triad with Brian Ford, Terry Peterson, and Jeremy Kreideman, Saturday, February 14th. To order tickets online, visit RacineTheatre.org or call 633-4218. Concessions and a cash bar will be available throughout the evening.
I'm Gregory Berg, and my guest on Monday's morning show, Scott Stossel, is the editor of Atlantic Monthly. But he has been contending since early childhood with nearly crippling anxiety disorders. He writes about it in a best-selling memoir called My Age of Anxiety. Support comes from Carthage College, welcoming author and prominent South African entrepreneur Herman Mashaba. He'll give a presentation Monday, February 9th. It's titled Economic Freedom of South Africa, The Contradictions. It begins at 6 p.m. and is open to the public.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconser, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Chuck Wolbers, your Education Matters host, and today we'll be talking about the local Boys and Girls Club as a youth-serving agency. My guest today is Scott McClellan, and he's the Chief Professional Officer of the Boys and Girls Club here in Kenosha. I'd like to begin by allowing Scott to describe his professional preparation, his educational background, and past experience within the Boys and Girls Club system. So without any further ado, I'm going to let him do that and go into a little bit more of his background.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate you inviting me on your show. I really appreciate this opportunity to be able to share a lot about the Boys and Girls Club. My background starts all the way when I was 7 years old, when I was a member of the Boys and Girls Club. And at that point in time, Boys and Girls Clubs are really kind of the gym and swim, the basketball, the swimming pool, a little bit of the games room. I remember having a Miss Pac-Man game in the games room and, you know, trying to rig it so that way we could get as many games as we wanted. But at that point in time, the Boys and Girls Club was just kind of a safe haven for us, where a place we could go where there was adults that cared about you and provided guidance, some nurturing. And at that point in time, we really didn't need much. Like, we didn't need the things that kids have today, you know, with the technology and all that extra stuff. But as I grew up through the Boys and Girls Club, I was able to develop some quality relationships that I still have today. And it really kind of put me on a path to go into social work. My experience at the Boys and Girls Club was very impactful to my career now because of some of the trials and tribulations I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And so having built a relationship with the executive director of the Boys and Girls Club in Allentown and essentially putting me in a place where I was going to go ahead and graduate from high school, able to get to college. I knew that I wanted to work in youth-serving capacity. So I spent a couple of years working as a case manager down in Illinois for kids that were sex offenders. And then I did probation aftercare for a couple of years until I was able to get into the Boys and Girls Club back in Rhode Island as an athletic coordinator. And that was in 2000. Okay. And so over the course of the last 15 years, I climbed the ladder, I suppose, if you want, going from athletics to programs to being a unit director, and then going into Boys and Girls Clubs of Boston, where you're talking about a major metro organization.
Sure.
I ran one of the clubs in Mattapan and Dorchester, which was a high gang population.
Sure, right next to Milton.
So we had a lot of it was definitely a lot of violence, a lot of ugly things that we saw over there. But that place, that club there, the Blue Hill Club, was definitely a safe haven for our kids. And I think the parents really appreciated the fact that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start thinking about what we do internally at the club, It's more than just a gym and swim now. It's the arts. It's health and life skills. It's character and leadership building. It's education. It's the sports, the fitness, the recreation. So Boys and Girls Clubs of America has really done a great job of bringing some quality programs to the Boys and Girls Club community, you know, over the course of the last, you know, seriously 15 years as I've seen our programs grow.
That you've been involved with?
That I've been involved
okay.
with.
Okay. And how old is the Boys and Girls Club?
Oh, over 100 years. I mean, okay. Boys and Girls Club started back in the late 1890s.
And where did they get started?
Connecticut, believe it or
okay.
not.
Okay, wow. Okay.
And so there's several clubs that are, I want to say there's just over 50 clubs that are over 100 years old.
Wow. Okay.
And so, you know, there's about 4,000 clubs nationwide.
Okay.
And each club has its own identity based on the community. But overall, you know, the mission is the same.
And it seems to, from what you've said, maintain a pretty consistent image of a safe haven.
Absolutely.
For kids and kids of all ages, actually.
Yes, we actually serve kids from ages 6 to 18, occasionally the 19-year-old, depending on where your birthday is. But yes, so, I mean, it's pretty much all school-aged kids.
Right.
Our Boys and Girls Club's a little different in our program model because we do workforce investment as well as summer youth employment. And with the workforce investment, we actually serve kids up to 24. I mean, I call a kid 24 a kid.
Sure.
But we serve up to 24, which I think is actually huge because what happens is kids go to high school, they turn 18, and either they're going to go to college because they've had that support, or they're going to go into the workforce. And then you have the kids that don't know what they're doing, and there's no resource. It's just, hey, you're out into the world, and here you go.
Uh-huh.
And so that 18 to 24 age group is kind of that missing.
And they are what you term OSY, or out-of-school youth. Is that part of that population?
I would say so.
Okay.
I would say so. Probably more 16 to 24.
Okay. And having some knowledge of how the Boys and Girls Club operates in Kenosha and some of the programming requirements, I wanted to throw out that that term because I want to make clear in my own mind what makes up or is considered out-of-school youth, and there's a number of different profiles they can meet. Mm-hmm. You are an imposing and very, very omnipresent force there in the building, I'm quite sure, so that certainly your image brings a great deal of recognition on the part of the young folks that are taking advantage of the programming there. As a role model, either implied or explicit, what are you prepared to tell a young person who wants to be like Scott? Where did you go to college, and how do you reinforce those kind of decisions in those young people?
Normally, it's funny. I've had the opportunity to be in some of the hands-on roles at the Boys and Girls Club. And so when you're working with a kid, say, how to work on your jump shot, it's a perfect opportunity to engage in conversation about what do you want to do when you graduate from high school? What are your goals? What are your aspirations? And I've been fortunate enough – this is actually going to sound kind of weird – I've been fortunate enough to have had a lot of crappy things happen when I was younger to where I can use that story when I'm connecting with a young person. Mm-hmm. And – you know, you have a kid will sit here and say, "Oh, Mr. Scott, you don't get it. You don't know what I've been through." And when I sit there and share a story about, well, you know, I do know what you've been through. I did sleep on a playground bench before. I have slept in a cemetery. I have slept in the back of a Boys and Girls Club van because I had no place to go. So I am able to empathize with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started to use my experiences in those conversations mm-hmm. When I'm engaging with young people. And then I explained to them that, you know, it is a hard road, but I still did it. I was able to get to college.
Mm-hmm.
I worked really hard. I walked on the basketball team over at Olivet Nazarene University.
Oh, okay. Where is that located?
It's in Kankakee, Illinois.
Oh, okay. Yep.
The Chicago Bears practice there.
Sure.
And so, but it's ironic. Like my first go at college was down at Florida Southern, in which I actually had a scholarship there. And failed out of school.
Oh,
didn't have anybody really kind of tell me how to be in college. And so I spent about 4 days working in a factory.
And balance that whole athletic aspiration with academic expectation.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think I had to do the work. And then realizing that when I lost that, it was devastating to me. And I knew I could give more to society. Mm-hmm. And so, losing the basketball piece really is what kind of drove me. And I say this now, had I not had basketball, I probably wouldn't have graduated because I needed to stay eligible. Therefore, I needed to study.
Sure. Okay.
It was also
no pass, no play.
Yeah. It was that extra driving force for me. And then you have coaches that are on you and making sure that you're hitting study hall. Mm-hmm. And you're maintaining your grades because now they put a financial investment in you.
Sure.
From a scholarship aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was fortunate enough to work hard and get that scholarship to where I was able
and
to
gain an appreciation for that connection.
Absolutely.
And that builds your work ethic, and that's something you can communicate to others and so forth. And so we can see a tremendous a trickle-down or waterfall, whatever, or cascade, whatever you want to call it, of that kind of a relationship and that conversation. And again, if there was any question as to whether an education and a value for education is important, just listening to this conversation, it's not all about just recreation, gym and swim, those kind of activities that you were talking about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even when I talk to young people, I talk about all the little things that they need to make sure that they're doing. Developing relationships with your teachers is so important because those are the people that are going to write those recommendations for you. Those are the people that are going to connect you to that next level of your life. And it's unfortunate that parents these days may not have the resources to help their kids along, not because they don't want to, but just because just the way society has kind of gone. So the Boys and Girls Club kind of facilitates kind of a quasi-parent role. Educator role, guidance counselor role.
Again, a continuation of that safe haven and nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the other organizations that have mentoring opportunities, do you also go into that? Is there a formally structured mentoring program available?
Yes, we do. Actually, Boys and Girls Clubs has a mentoring program called Be Great.
Okay.
And what we do is we pair up staff with X amount of kids where they will meet with that kid on a regular basis, what's going on in school, what's going on at home, how can I help you, can I connect you with a resource, Mr. Scott, I'm failing homework. Well, you know what, let's make a phone call to your guidance counselor and get you some homework help. Or, better yet, we have our homework session at the club from 4 to 5. We can go over to the teen center and connect you with that staff member, and now you have that resource because you're coming to the club.
Sure.
Versus, I don't have the money to pay for a tutor at a college or something like that.
Right. And if I'm trying to do the homework at home, it's difficult for folks there who may not understand some of the processes, so I can't get the help with homework. And, oh, by the way, the technology there that they expect me to do it on is all virus-infected or something like that. Maybe it has to be shared with someone else, and it gets very, very difficult. So the Boys and Girls Club, in that case, can make up for that gap.
We do. We actually have two computer labs at the club, one for our younger kids, 6 to 12, and then for our teens, that 13 to 18 population. and one of the good things now is that we did receive a few grants where we've upgraded to services, because I know a lot of schools are going to the whole one-to-one computing, and so we want to make sure that we're in line with what's going on in the school departments.
Correct.
And so
there's a more seamless connection between after-school activity, which is out-of-school activity, which is typically what Boys and Girls Club is attempting to do, and complement what's going on in the school during the day.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings me to the CLC program, the Community Learning Center.
Right, and I'm glad we're going into that now because part of the conversation and a long question that we had discussed on the basis of what I've read in the local paper and maybe some other people have also, you're relatively new to the community.
Yes.
You are the chief professional officer, but there's been a lot of news about Boys and Girls Club and Scott McClellan in the Kenosha News since the summer. And I think that's where I first started reading about your background, and having spent some time in Pennsylvania, know a little bit about Allentown and some of those areas, and share some experience in New England, where I know you've spent some time. And but your programming ranges from athletics and education enrichment to arts and music.
Yep.
The newspaper says, and I'm sure this is accurate, you serve approximately 43% of the community, which includes about 19,000 children. So that outpaces many school districts.
So let me hit on that specific number. Over the course of the year, through our core club programs, our athletics, our gang prevention, and our summer youth employment and WIA programs, we do serve about 43% of the kids in this community, regardless of what area that they find fitting their need. We still provide that service. So if you think about from a sports aspect, we have the football, we have the basketball, we have the baseball.
And a beautiful indoor field.
Absolutely, yes. It is phenomenal.
First class.
I'm very fortunate to be able to work in a facility.
And kind of inherit just a wonderful facility in that respect, yes.
Our board has done a great job with the campaign to get that facility. The city's been wonderful to us. The community's been fantastic to the club in terms of assuring that we have the resources to provide for our kids. So I can't thank this community enough across the board. But to my point on the kids that we serve, it is a lot of kids, and it's the kids that come through all of our programs.
Mm-hmm.
But what we like to do is when we have kids that are coming in through our athletics, we like to be able to get those kids over into an arts program, over into an education program, and then vice versa. The kids that don't necessarily participate in maybe some of the athletics, but we can get them into some of those and really broaden their skill set, their mind around
their perspective, their outlook.
Yes.
And how that complements every other part of their life and their quality of life. Part of my comment here and some of the impression is that typically most people would still think of the Boys and Girls Club as just that place as an athletic or recreational outlet. I think that's important. I think that when you're out of school with the pressures and expectations of the conventional classroom, having that adjunct is very, very important and something hugely exciting and enthusiastic to look forward to. So you have the luxury of being able to balance the not only the athletic and recreation activity, which is a great outlet, and just again building those endorphins and those good feelings by incorporating the educational and other arts and crafts programs and so forth and so on. You off balance it, as I see it, to a point where you're going to be playing some ball or playing some sports or some soccer or something like that. Now let's take an education break. You're going to have to go do your homework. Or I'd like you to work on and maybe help somebody with an arts and crafts program. Mm-hmm. We're going to start getting something ready to decorate the club. As opposed to we're sitting in class, we're going from one class to another, we're getting one bit of subject matter after another, and every once in a while you get a little break for some recreation or socialization. And would you agree, perhaps, that kids, our young people, tend to learn best when they're active and then take a learning break every once in a while? Do you think that the learning and that educational component is more long-lasting that way?
I personally feel that if you can incorporate the activity with the learning, kids will do better. And the reason why I say that, at least from an after-school perspective, a kid goes to school for 6-7 hours a day, like you just said, and you're in front of a teacher, and they're on the chalkboard, and it's one thing after another, and then you get a break when you go to gym class.
Or the whiteboard or PowerPoint is up there, and right.
And then you get a break, like you said, for lunch or recess, depending on your age. Whereas the Boys and Girls Club, we try and incorporate the educational component into everything we do. I'll take, for example, Project Learn. Project Learn is how you incorporate education into, let's say, sports. So we have a basketball league. Well, we need people that can do scorekeeping. We need people that can do the stat book.
Sure.
And so then we need people to actually go ahead, they're posting this stuff on the leaderboard. Well, I need to know what my shooting percentage is. I need to know what my scoring average is. So now you have the kids doing this and posting it. So now not only are they, gaining a practical skill in terms of running a league, but you're also gaining the skills around the math aspect of that.
Uh-huh. So the importance of the outcome of those programs is driven by the value and, if you want to call it, intellectual or educational academic skill that underlies all of that, that feeds it. Ironic, I was just having this conversation with one of my colleagues today about this very topic. And certainly students and people of all ages are interested in athletics. It's a, it's a huge part of our culture. In other countries, maybe larger and so forth and so on. However, one of the first things I remember my dad, first thing in the morning, pick up, open up the sports page and go right to the scores. And he had a tremendous understanding for being and appreciation for being able to apply those concepts and understand about those numbers, things that just bewilder me. So that as important as that is, now you can draw a direct correlation and build that value to the point where that student is now saying, gosh, in school, I just don't get it. But now I see it's important. How do I do that figuring? Oh, that's what those numbers mean. So it's in a way learning by default, and it's more exciting and maybe more long-lasting because they're learning. They just don't know it.
And that's the key. I used to go, it's the trick was hiding education into your programs.
It's like soccer is running. You just don't know it.
Exactly.
When you're trying to make all those decisions on the field, control the ball, and those kind of things.
Yes. You know, a program that I did that I thought was really successful was what we call Passport to Manhood. And, you know, telling, you know, let's see, 40, you know, boys between the ages of 13 and 15 that you need to come on a Saturday and be taught, you know, hygiene or how to deal with authority or how to deal with diversity, you're not going to get them in. They would much rather sleep in or play video games. So what we did is we broke the kids up into four teams. And for the first hour, the first two teams would come in and do a learning session. The second hour, those two teams would go play basketball, full regulation, well, not for regulation, but a regular game, 20-minute halves. And at halftime, we asked those kids 10 questions on the subject matter that they just went through.
We were exposed to, sure.
And we applied points to them. So the first, you know, six were worth 2 points. The next three were worth 3 points. The fourth one, the last one was worth 4 points. And those points get added to your score on the scoreboard. So if you don't have necessarily the skills on the basketball court like you'd want, you can still win the ball game. You can blow the other team out if you're answering all the questions right, because you paid attention in the session and knew that, hey, we need to at least get half of these questions so that way you have a competitive edge during this game.
Sure.
And so you start up at halftime, and now you got 20 kids screaming and fighting, oh, this is the answer, this is the answer, and they're communicating with each other. So now you're building not only relationships between peers, and it's different peer groups because you might have a couple of athletes, you might have a couple of kids that are really studious, and now you're blending those kids that would probably never even have hung out together until you get this situation. And now they're working towards a common goal, and they're learning the content that we provided for them, and they're having fun on the basketball end of it.
Cooperation, leadership, all those other components that are so important in youth development that we oftentimes find hard to quantify and structure into a conventional classroom setting.
Right.
And so these outcomes happen almost spontaneously, and it's much like we were talking about, it's almost by accident or by default.
Right.
And I think as a result, most of those competencies and most of those understandings and skills are more long-lasting. Neurons that fire together are wired together. And so as those students are doing more of those activities, much like the activity I heard that you did with a job fair, you'd play some ball and then come back and interview. Can you tell us a little bit about that activity? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah. So what we did was it's
very innovative.
So the program the Boys and Girls Club has is called Career Launch, and it is a program that is geared towards kids understanding how to write a resume, how do you interview, right down to what should your attire be?
Sure, dress for success.
You know that type of stuff. And so what we did was we ended up getting, I mean, it was probably about 80 kids in the club that day. And what we did is, you know, you go in and play basketball for an hour, and then you come upstairs and you spend 30 minutes in the classroom, and we're going over these different topics. And it's almost like a round table. So one class of, you know,
it's 10
kids.
It's almost like circuit training.
Yeah. One class
Good
goes into
gosh, yeah.
resumes. The next one goes into interviews. The next one goes into, you know, how to search for a job.
Sure.
And they go around the circuit. So each,
and the whole thing is built on employability skills and employability building.
Absolutely. Yep.
Sure.
And so they do that, like the carousel, throughout the course of the day. And you give little contests. Okay, who can answer this question? You know, you get, you know, I don't know, candy. I don't, maybe not candy, but you'll get a reward.
A premium, yep.
You know, we provide the food, T-shirts, all that type of stuff. Some little trinkets to encourage kids. But the fact of the matter is we had 80 kids in there that day for that function. And we also kind of share with the kids that, hey, listen, if you can go through this and get this skill set, when the summertime comes around, you're going to be ahead of the game against other kids who are trying to get jobs because you've already done this. You get it.
It's like the kid who goes into the weight room off-season and gets mm-hmm. FaceTime with the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Come time for cuts, we know who's going to get the look.
You know, just from a work ethic standpoint, you may not be the best person out there, but your work ethic, I got to tell you, this is one of the things
you've demonstrated a whole bunch more to that coaching staff, mm-hmm. possibly in the off season, with your work ethic under those weights, and using that as an example. Yeah, this is remarkable.
The other piece of this that I thought was really good, it was boys and girls.
Uh huh.
And I think the thing that was really, really remarkable is that they showed up for it, and I think that's half the battle of young people, making sure that they get there.
Sure.
And they do it on their own. It wasn't like, hey, mom forced you to go. They wanted to go. They felt like there was something in it for them. Even if it was just the basketball component, we still gave them other things to take away from that. And knowingly at the end of the day that summer job is going to be there waiting for them.
Sure. And that's a big part of the summer cycle, I guess, if mm-hmm. you want to call it that. And so your facility and the programming almost reflects, again, what the school is doing. It complements directly because mm-hmm. during the school year, we're going to be looking at a certain other set of activities to do during the summer.
Right.
We're going to have more free time on our hands. There's the opportunity for employment. People tend to do that. Hopefully, we're not building a false sense of expectation as to what's going to happen when school is over. As you look at the workplace, I'm not used to working 12 months a year, and that's going to be the expectation of that boss.
Right. Well, I mean, I think with the WIA program now, that's going to, you know, it's not going to, obviously we're not able to touch every single kid, but we're able to at least provide kids with that beginner phase of job and career
mm-hmm.
and understanding, hey, listen, if I want to get paid, I got to be here on time. I got to produce to a certain expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important for us when we meet with these job sites that we're communicating, hey, it is important that you share your expectation with this young person, because if you don't, we're setting them up for failure.
I totally understand that. I'm going to just remind everybody who may be just tuning in that this is WGTD and Education Matters. We are today talking with Scott McClellan, who is the Chief Professional Officer of the Boys and Girls Club in Kenosha. And we're talking about the Boys and Girls Club as a youth-serving agency and many of the fine programming opportunities that they have engaged and initiated under his leadership at this local facility. You were talking about the outcome of one of the programs that you had done, a very, very innovative employability skill-building activity that was focused around, well, in this case, basketball,
mm-hmm.
which is close to your heart, which I'm sure that that must be terribly exciting for you to get involved with something you have such a close identity with.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's one of those things that I wish when I was going to the Boys and Girls Club, someone had rolled this out for me.
Because in Rhode Island, it was soccer.
Soccer is big out there.
Enormous.
Soccer and lacrosse.
Those
are really big out there. But I think about what we can provide for our kids now, and I think back, I'm like, man, if I would have had all this when I was a kid, I'd be so much further along in life. Just from, you know, from a music opportunity, you know, right now, we have a recording studio that's almost finished. And so
I knew about that, and I was wondering what the progress was. If time allows, I'd like to catch up on some of the initiatives and new things that are happening, certainly that I'm sure that the community would look forward to hearing about. But, again, keeping on point because education matters, as I like to say, you serve as we were talking about a number of 19,000. That's not necessarily 19,000 card-carrying Boys and Girls Club members necessarily, but these are all this is the potential for the population of kids that could be taking advantage of programs at the Boys and Girls Club.
Let me interject real quick just to clarify that there's 19,000 kids that are school age. Serve about 43% of that 19,000 in the city of Kenosha.
Still,
it's just over 8,000 kids that we've served over the course of the last year in various capacities.
In various capacities. Yeah. So they may not be card-carrying members per se.
Right.
Okay. And what this may surprise people because I know something about this. What is the age group, the total age group of members of the Boys and Girls Club? What age do they start at, and what's the youngest and what's the oldest?
The youngest would be 6 years old, and the oldest would be 18, 19, depending on when you graduate from high school.
Okay, when you graduate from high school. That's your target population.
Yes.
However, you have introduced some somewhat more innovative elements that other members of the community can be involved in Boys and Girls Club programming during the day, and that extends your age level quite a bit.
Well, so we do have a couple of opportunities during the, you know, we do open up for seniors. We do have some senior activities that are going on. We have the walking track, and it started with that where they would just, you know, seniors would come in to walk. But it's really morphed into some more programs, pickleball, volleyball, things like that, where
wonderful.
It's an opportunity for seniors to get be active. It's winter time, and you know, during the day, it's really not utilized.
I was going to say, the lights are on, you may as well use it.
And so, you know, they've come in. And one of the things, actually, that I really wanted to do was kind of build a partnership between seniors and our young people and kind of build, like, this generations type of programming. I think, you know, if you talk about our food program where we're learning culinary arts skills.
Sure. Gateway comes out there.
Yep. Kids in the Kitchen program. I think it's a great opportunity for, you know, maybe someone that was a chef and is retired can come in and teach our kids. And then on the other side of that would be kids are very tech savvy. I mean, they could teach me a ton.
Sure.
You know, where maybe our kids can actually teach our seniors some things that are going on in their world.
And this is not unlike something we've seen in other youth-serving agencies like the YMCA, mm-hmm. for example, in other communities.
Yep.
So as far as what we were talking about earlier, the impact and importance of mentors for some of our mm-hmm. young folks that need that extra bit of guidance, now you've got a ready population of them that were hanging out there during the day anyway.
Right.
And it's not unusual to see these folks there as the young people come into the building. There's Mr. So-and-so, mm-hmm. and eventually they could strike up a relationship, whatever you want to call it, however you want to characterize it, so that this person may be able to help out with some homework or something of that nature. And, oh, by the way, I'm going fishing,
yep.
or something of that nature, and make those connections and build those positive outlooks and appreciation for those positive possibilities. That's wonderful, and I truly get the sense that this is something that you embrace. And as you I guess manifest or personalize, so that that being the case, do you conduct? Are there opportunities for professional development for your staff? And you've got some great people over there. No two ways about it. I know Dennis and Chris Isaacson and just wonderful, wonderful people as community resources. Now, bringing your vision, which is a little bit different from your predecessors, and things change all the time, is there an ongoing professional development for those folks to reflect those values?
There are some opportunities for professional development. But I, When it's funny because when people say professional development, you automatically think, oh, you know what? I'm going to send somebody to a training. They're going to go for 2 days. They're going to learn a bunch of skill sets, and all of a sudden they're going to come back and be the best worker in the world. They're going to be saving, you know, 10,000 more lives. But I believe that professional development is an ongoing process.
Understood. It's reinforcement.
Yes. And so for me, it's, you know, when I'm meeting with Chris or I meet with Dennis, it's talking through some of the opportunities, how we could best utilize their skill set. And for me, it's making sure I can put them in the best possible position for success.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of education through the process and learning what it takes to provide the resource for the kids.
Are there consistent themes that those kids that are taking advantage of programming there can always expect? You know, Cliff says it, or Chris says it, or Kathy says it, and these are themes that we live by, and everyone models them, and there's no joking about it. The kids know what's expected of them.
It's a good question because. You know, when I first started there, the model was a little different where you had different people managing, let's say, the teen program. And we've actually just gone ahead and hired our director of teen services. And so it's really building consistency amongst all of our staff of setting the same message and that we're all, you know, pounding the drum the same way. And I think for me, it's important that I'm not just, hey, that's just the boss, but I'm part of the process.
Understood, sure.
Giving people an opportunity to have autonomy within their programs and allowing them to grow just within the process and supporting that. When someone comes to me and says, hey,
you have to reinforce the same ethic. In other words, if someone's working at a desk somewhere, I've got a certain set of standards here, and then I've got to go do something different on the floor.
Absolutely. The biggest thing that for me, and I just actually had this conversation, I met with the staff recently, which was it was important that we not put ourselves in silos where administration is here, where facility is here, where programming is here, and thinking that we're all working in different compartments. Mm-hmm. We're all here for the same purpose, and not one position is greater than the other, and we're all on the same page. And it's very important that, in actuality, one position may affect another position in a totally different department.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that everybody recognizes that. And taking the opportunity to learn from somebody else. You know, I know there's people that are younger than me that have had less experience in the Boys and Girls Club or in youth development professional, and I always take opportunity to listen to somebody because you may have a way better idea than I ever will. And I think that's one of the things that we forget about is taking the time to learn from somebody. One of my best friends always tells me that there's always an opportunity for learning. And so you need to, if you close your ears to it or close your eyes to it, you may miss out on something that'll benefit you down the road.
Right.
And so I always, you know, even sitting in this conversation and listening to some of the stuff that you're saying, you know, I pay attention to it because there may be a time where I might need to dig deep into the mental Rolodex of information.
Understood. And sometimes if I bring up an impression, that's going to be a resource for you to capitalize on later that, oh, I didn't know that this existed.
Right.
But it sounds to me like what the people and your professional staff, regardless of what role or capacity they serve, they appreciate a sense of synergy. So that, yes, the professional staff is the adults, and we are mutually supportive. And I think that that's a very, very important statement because it's conspicuous. You can't fool kids about that kind of stuff.
Right.
You may be able to fool them on certain things, but not that.
I would say kids are probably the most observant people on the planet.
They're extremely perceptive.
Mm-hmm.
They
can sense they can sense when people are not on the same page or there is a rift in the time continuum, so to speak, you know? And so we've got to be mindful of that. Because if I'm going to sit here and say something, I also have to live it.
And that's important. Young people may doubt what you say, but they're darn sure not going to doubt what you do.
Right.
Because they can see it, and it's right in front of them. It's very, very conspicuous. We've been enjoying, and I've been enjoying, just a thoroughly enlightening conversation about the programming that is conducted at the Boys and Girls Club, and what a hugely important local resource as an example that it is. And again, tying in the educational importance and the impact of education, and that's a significant focus. And given the range of ages that you serve, as I said, I've said to you before, you're not totally unlike a school superintendent, overseeing everything from the most basic or primary to post-secondary involvement, which means considering what you're doing with the University of Excellence. Mm-hmm. What is the University of Excellence? Can you share that with some of the our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the University of Excellence is an initiative. It's based on a collegial academic model designed to assist students in not only being college-ready after graduating from the program, but also provide students the opportunities to develop self-discipline, community engagement, self-awareness, critical thinking, and that will serve them well in today's environment. So what we've basically done is taken all of our programs and looked at the individual programs and how they sync up with what's going on in school, maybe in a kid's portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in school, we're encouraging self-discipline, striving for the honor roll.
Okay.
We can prep a kid for tests,
sure,
that type of stuff, so
sure,
it's in line. And if a kid goes through this over the course of the 4 years or however long they're at the club, there are opportunities for scholarships.
Okay.
To Gateway.
Okay, yeah.
Parkside and Carthage.
So was this a spontaneous, like, brand new idea, or is this a model that you've borrowed or seen somewhere else?
I think it's both. I think it was actually really created before I got here.
Oh, okay.
There were several board members that had gone to a national conference and saw some of the great things other clubs were doing,
okay,
and saying, you know what, we need to be able to do that. So how do we create a strong educational environment at the Boys and Girls Club that will really propel our kids to the next level and giving them almost kind of like a head start when they leave high school?
And you could almost finish that statement by saying, because education matters.
100%.
And I had said at one time, is the educational focus an incidental matter, or is the organization intentionally academically founded? I've got to believe that it's very, very evident that that this is a totally intentional approach.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And I think, this started at Boys and Girls of America. This came from the top down, saying, listen, we can't just, be concerned about the athletic component of what's going on in kids' lives. We need to be able to give them more, because the home, unfortunately, is not providing what it used to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can go ahead and, again, give these kids a platform or a springboard,
yes,
to success, then that's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important that we don't start thinking about expansion, but we, mm-hmm, think about what are the resources in the community that we can collaborate to really build a quality program. And that means partnering with other nonprofit organizations, the schools, colleges, and leaders.
Sure.
So.
Well, we're getting close to time. As I said, I've thoroughly enjoyed the interaction and conversation. There are always going to be challenges and so forth, and this is a very, very closely tied community function and activity. Is the community able to help, and in what way?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing we need to do is make sure the community understands really what we can do, all the services that we provide. And so I think the community needs to be able to go ahead and take hold of that. I mean, $20 a year, I mean, you're getting all this for $20 a year. So I think, one, making sure the community knows what we're doing, and two, if you have other resources that you think would help the Boys and Girls Club, ultimately helping your children be successful, that would be what we look for. Is, I think the phrase is, it takes a village.
Sure.
And we're part of the village.
We are part of the village. Very well put. Very well put. Well, today I'm honored to have been able to share some valuable time with our guest, Scott McClellan, who is the Chief Professional Officer of the Boys and Girls Club here in Kenosha, Wisconsin. We've learned a great deal about the important work this vibrant organization performs in our community and the productive strides it is taking under his leadership and experience. So until next time, I thank you for listening, everybody. I certainly, again, thank our guest, Scott McClellan.
Thank you.
Because education matters.
Yes, it does.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. Support comes from Gene's Jazz Series at the Racine Theater Guild, celebrating Valentine's Day with Victor De Lorenzo, Janet Schiff, Scott Johnson, and 1913. And Triad with Brian Ford, Terry Peterson, and Jeremy Kreideman, Saturday, February 14th. To order tickets online, visit racinetheater.org or call 633-4218. Concessions and a cash bar will be available throughout the evening.
I'm Gregory Berg, and my guest on Monday's morning show, Scott Stossel, is the editor of Atlantic Monthly.